now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 1230 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us. Friday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR. I don't know about the weather today. It seems like it's trying to clear up. Every once in a while, we get a little bit of weak sunshine, but next thing you know, it looks kind of threatening again. So, we'll see. It's certainly warm and sticky, that's for sure. You know, we had a couple of cool weeks there, tail end of July, beginning of August. It wasn't anything disastrous, but it didn't seem like the tail end of July and the beginning of August. That all changed over the last week, week and a half. It's been hot and sticky. Boy, this morning, I think, worst morning yet so far. We were in the 70s early this morning. Relative humidity was near 100%. We had had rain. We got a little bit more rain. It was just, you know, felt like you were being hit with a warm dish rag when you stepped outside. And it really, it's still kind of that way. We don't have any rain anymore. By the way, there were quite a few showers this morning that appear to have passed just south of most of our listening area. We got a little bit. The last rain we saw here in Butler was shortly after daybreak. It was quite a bit of it that went just to the south of us. Allegheny County, even parts of Armstrong, Indiana counties, up toward Dubois, they got quite a bit more rain than we did. So we'll see what happens today and into the weekend. It's a little bit unsettled, a little bit touch and go. We'll see. Open talk to begin the program today. We're going to be talking about the eclipse a little bit later on the program today. We had a chance to. We did a program on the eclipse a couple of weeks ago with Steve Ruskin. It was very informative. We had a chance to grab a couple of minutes this afternoon with Dave Barron, who is an acclaimed science writer. And we're going to talk a little bit about the eclipse with him and a little bit of the history of the eclipse, specifically a total eclipse that passed across the United States back in, it was the late 1800s, 1878, 1879, somewhere around in there. So Dave will join us, a very knowledgeable science writer. Hopefully he'll make it easier for us to understand. Astronomy is something that has always somewhat baffled me. Even when I was a kid, you know, elementary science classes, it was always a little bit difficult for me to grasp. I was always interested in it, but, you know, this whole concept of the constellations, I could never quite see what they were talking about, you know, Orion the Hunter and Cassiopeia and all, you know, Andromeda. I'd never quite see them. It was difficult for me to grasp the concept of the orbits and, the, you know, lunar eclipse and all that jazz. Well, maybe we can call upon Dave Barron to help us understand it a little bit more. It's going to happen this Monday. And if it's a clear day, we'll see at least a partial eclipse here in our. We will not get the total eclipse. We are not quite in the path of totality, as they call it. But it will have some effect on us, if, of course, it's clear skies. If it's cloudy like today, maybe not. Also on the program today, we're going to be talking about chronic pain management. Handling chronic pain. There are millions of Americans who suffer from chronic pain. Pain that just doesn't go away, you know. So we'll talk about that with Tracy Stein. She has studied it quite a bit. She advocates a mix of traditional medicine and alternative medicine. It's intriguing. So she'll be chatting with us a little bit later on the program today. But first of all, open talk. Phone number is 283-2525. We had some really interesting discussion yesterday on statues. And I got to be honest with you, when I brought up the subject yesterday, you know, I thought we might get a couple of comments, but I didn't realize what a thing this has become. It was all over TV last night. I turned on a TV, last evening and into the nighttime hours, and man, that's all people were talking about on the cable news channels. Statues. And whether or not Confederate statues should come down, mainly in southern states, because that's mainly where they are. So we had a wide variety of opinions expressed yesterday on the program. It was interesting to hear what people thought. One of our callers yesterday suggested it was almost scary, because one of our callers yesterday suggested, well, maybe in national parks it'd be okay to leave them up, but maybe in city squares, particularly in southern cities, maybe not such a good idea to have a statue of Jefferson Davis or Robert E. Lee. So I thanked that individual for his contribution to the program yesterday. It was interesting. And then lo and behold, I get into the newsroom this morning, and Gettysburg National Park spokeswoman Katie Lawhorn spoke to our newsroom yesterday and suggested pretty much the same thing, at least in terms of Gettysburg. She said, I'll just give you a couple of quotes of the statement that she gave to our newsroom. Quote, the National Park Service is committed to safeguarding these unique and site-specific memorials in perpetuity. So in other words, the monuments at Gettysburg National Military Park in Pennsylvania will not be coming down. Now, we speculated yesterday, I guess I speculated, that I didn't know whether there were too many Confederate monuments there. But boy, there are. There are a lot of Confederate monuments and statues in Gettysburg. And she says they're keeping them. She says the memorials, which were erected predominantly in the early and mid-1900s, are an important part of the cultural landscape. So at Gettysburg, they're keeping them. What do you think? 283-2525 is our number. It's open talk. 283-2525. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn. You're on the air.
Hi there. How are you today? I'm sorry I missed yesterday's conversation. It would have been very interesting.
It was, yes.
Mm-hmm. I personally think that you can take every statue down in the world, but you can't erase history. And if we start taking statues down, do you also take all the books out of the schools and colleges, and we stop talking about the past? Where does it stop? And I personally think these people need to get a life and find something else to worry about instead of about statues and what they were in the past. I understand that we haven't had a very nice past as far as some of the things that have happened over the years, but you can't erase it. We need to move forward, and we need to learn to live together.
Well, I'm not so sure that it's an effort to erase the past history. I've come to understand, as I've read about this issue over the past few days, that many of these statues, and even the spokesman at Gettysburg told our newsroom yesterday, that many of these statues were erected predominantly in the early and mid-19th century, or 20th century, so early and mid-1900s. That's way, way past the Civil War. It was at the time that Jim Crow was in full bloom in the South. And there are many people who suggest that these statues were erected as a kind of coded symbol to African Americans, you know. Not so much, who doesn't know about Robert E. Lee, for goodness sakes? Do you need a statue to remind you that Robert E. Lee existed? I don't think so.
No, but taking a statue down, my point is, taking a statue down, is it going to make it go away? Correct?
Well, no, of course it's not going to make it go away, but you don't have them in the center, you know, in the square of the city. Yeah. 283-2525 is our number, 283-2525. Let me go to this line next. Hi there, caller. This is Dave. Thanks for waiting. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave.
Hi. You're on the air. Hi.
If we're going to take all the statues down,
mm-hmm.
what are we going to do about colleges like Washington and Lee?
That's a good point, because that they've been battling about that. And some of the northern colleges, believe it or not, particularly Harvard and Yale, where, and I don't know a lot about those schools. I certainly didn't go there. But apparently they have halls that are named after people like John C. Calhoun and some other people that whose reputation has become tarnished quite a bit. And they're having controversy over whether or not to rename those buildings. So your point is well taken. Yeah.
We can't just change the name of colleges willy-nilly. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole idea of taking statues down, I think, is silly, too. The people existed, and they were doing their duty, and the statues should be there.
Well, if you were a person of color, if you were an African-American, if you were a black person, do you think you'd feel differently about that if you had to walk past a statue of Jefferson Davis in your town?
I don't know. Huh? I don't know how I feel.
I can only guess as either.
I think it's time that we stop fighting the Civil War.
Well, I would certainly agree with you on that.
And that's what all this is. It's going back to the Civil War. Well, they were heroes in their part of the country, and they were part of the United States.
Well,
and yes, they seceded, but they're still part of our history.
Yeah,
and I think that they should be there.
But they declared war on the United States.
That's right.
Some might call that treason.
Well, originally, they were not charged with treason, and then the Congress decided that they had to be charged with treason, and then it was undone, and they never were charged.
You're correct. Yeah, but I think that was a conscious effort. That was Lincoln's philosophy. He didn't want to, cause a great deal of additional consternation after the war by too much punishment. Of course, unfortunately, Lincoln died almost immediately at the end of the war. That's when he was killed.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, my friend. I appreciate your thoughts on it. You say keep the statues, right?
I would think so,
okay.
Yeah.
Thanks for your contribution. Thanks a lot.
Bye.
283-2525 is the number, 283-2525. The majority of the calls we've had have indicated that people think those statues should stay, that they should not come down. They took another one down, where was it, in Richmond, Virginia, overnight. Baltimore took a couple of down during the middle of the night a couple of nights ago. 283-2525. Let's go to this line next. Hi there, caller. Dave Malarkey here. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Yes, I was going to talk about the Black Lives, Charlotte down there. They had that pride down there.
Yes.
Those people, they applied for their permits. They were legally marching. If the people on the other side wouldn't have enticed them and they sprayed them with pepper spray on film, they would have marched. We had peaceful marches. Not we, but they had peaceful marches. They're idiots than people anyways, but why would you go down there and entice somebody to riot? If they would have just left to march, they would have been okay. But they had to go down there and throw things at them and put pepper spray at them, and that actually captured the one guy, and the police had to go get him.
So you blame the counter protesters, not the white supremacists.
The white supremacists had permits. Yes, they were marching peacefully. They did have all their shields because they had this things thrown at them. Also, they're wrong, the white supremacists, but they have a right to freedom of speech. The other people started throwing things at them and jeering them on and spraying them with pepper spray and spitting on them. Now, what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, President Trump suggested something similar to what you're saying there, that he said there was blame on both sides on his...
But if you watch all the paper, they don't show it no more. You watch all the newscasts. Who started it first was the Black Lives Matter. I don't know if that's their name, but they started it.
Hmm. All right, my friend. Hey, appreciate you sharing your thoughts with us.
Yep.
That's what we're here for. Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks.
Bye.
283-2525 is our number. Open talk today, 283-2525. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hey, my thing is I think we need to keep the statues to remind us what not to be. The Civil War was bad. We all get that. There were mistakes on both sides. But the issue that of taking them down makes us forget. And by forgetting, we're doomed to repeat it.
Well, that's an interesting look. I hadn't thought about it way. Yeah.
Okay. My other point is okay, so let's take down statues of people who glorified slavery, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, shouldn't we take down statues of people who are homophobic because they were anti-gay? So does that mean we start taking down statues of Martin Luther King? Or how about the 3 statues of Lenin that are in this country about communism?
Really? Do we have statues of Lenin here?
There's one in Seattle.
Wow, I didn't know that.
There is a picture of Lenin. There is a statue of Lenin in Seattle.
Goodness gracious, they tore them down in Russia when the Soviet Union collapsed.
And then the only other point that I had that really disturbs me about all of it is of all the statues, there, in my opinion, there's one you would think they wouldn't touch, and that would be Lincoln. He's the one who got at least the ball rolling to getting them the rights that they deserve. And yet I've seen pictures of statues of Lincoln being destroyed and burned and vandalized.
Well, Lincoln was extremely unpopular in the South, you know.
Well, exactly. He freed the slaves. He tried something. He might not have gone far enough, whatever, but he tried. So of all the statues, I would think his is the one that they wouldn't worry about.
No.
That's just me.
You missed my point. The white people in the South hated Lincoln. In fact, John Wilkes Booth shot Lincoln because of Lincoln's stance during the Civil War. John Wilkes Booth was a disgruntled Confederate.
So then that's what I'm saying is that if you would think the Black Lives Matter movement and Antifa and everything, Lincoln wouldn't be on their target. But yet his statues are getting vandalized, too.
Well, I didn't know that, no.
There was one that just got was busted up by a sledgehammer, and then they set it on fire.
Oh, my. My.
My teachers taught me in history when I used to complain about history class and how much I didn't want to learn it. That if you don't know it, you're doomed to repeat it.
Well, there's no
question
about that.
And it seems like this country is 200 years ago all over again.
All right, my friend. Hey, thanks for the call.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Yep, good to talk with you. Thanks for sharing your thoughts. 283-2525 is the number. 283-2525. Open talk here on the program. This is certainly a subject that touches the nerve of a lot of people, you know. And that's here in Western Pennsylvania. Can you imagine what a raw nerve it is in the Deep South? Right? To the best of my knowledge, we don't have any Confederate statues around here. I could be wrong. But, I mean, you can hear the passion of the callers here, how disturbed they are here in Western Pennsylvania. You can imagine what the feelings are in Mississippi and Alabama and the Carolinas. 283-2525, our number, 283-2525. It's open talk. Hi there, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hello, Dave.
Howdy.
Talk about the statues several things unbelievable, amazing about this. The first thing is how fast it took off that these town councils, mayors, city mayors, whatever, jumped on the bandwagon and removing these statues in the middle of the night like it's some urgent, you know, emergency. Just incredible to see that in itself.
What do you think? I don't have any inside info here. My thought is that their rationale is they're trying to avoid, demonstrations and rallies and confrontations, but that would be only my guess. I mean, why else would you do it in the middle of the night?
Oh, just unreal. Baltimore, Richmond, Virginia?
Yeah.
Taking Nazis.
Baltimore as well, you're correct, yeah.
But the idea that what these statues of Lee, I guess it's mainly Lee and Jackson.
And Jefferson Davis.
Stonewall Jefferson Davis, is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was the president of the Confederate States.
Right. But what they supposedly represented, the whole twisting of the history of this, the so-called Civil War, and that it was primarily about slavery, which is the complete opposite, erroneous, non-truth.
You don't think the Civil War was about slavery?
No, I do not. It was a selling point later on when they find, like, Europe might want to get involved with helping the South.
Well, what was it about
then?
Because
the South and Europe were huge trading partners. It was all about tariffs and creating a big, you know, a consolidated big government here centralized in the North, and with Lincoln and his buddies being the head of it. That's what it was about. Lincoln didn't care one way or the other about whether he wanted to ship Africans all back to Africa. I mean, his speeches are available to read and all sorts of information about that.
So you...
And how that information that's available and learnable is completely overridden, and this idea takes off that it's all, it was just all about slavery. It's just unreal.
Well, there are a lot of folks who would disagree with you. You understand that?
Well, I'm sure that's the victors get to write the history. So, like Doris Kearns Goodwin, she's one of the, you know, she, sanitizes it. But there's also other people, revisionists, I guess they even call themselves, to bring the real facts out if, you know, a person is so inclined to want to learn them. There's a couple books, The Real Lincoln, Lincoln Unmasked, and others. Clyde Wilson, Thomas D. Lorenzo, the real facts of, you know, what was happening at the time. And basically the main point to do with this is it was not about slavery. The whole thing was not about slavery.
All right, my friend. Appreciate your call.
That, like I say, that stuff's available to learn and read from those just two authors I've read, and other, whole realm of people connected to that to bring you the, you know, a better picture of what was happening. But all right, interesting day. You sure have some interesting guests and shows, I'll tell you.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate
you're
that.
The best around in my area of reception. So thanks for all that.
Sure, good to talk with you. Thanks. 283-2525 is the number. Wow. Discounting slavery is the prime cause of the Civil War. 283-2525 is the number. It's open talk on the program today, 283-2525. Well, it certainly is an issue that has stirred up passion, has it not? Wow. That's for sure. And I'm not sure it's going to die down anytime soon, to be honest with you. I really don't know. When you can hear how passionate people espouse their point of view, and you wonder if they're not going to be mounting demonstrations and counter-demonstrations in cities across the country. I don't know. Let's hope that they are peaceful. That would be the best we could hope for, right? Peaceful demonstrations. 283-2525, our number. Open talk, 283-2525. Hi there, this is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Yeah, Dave, you got a great show. I just want to throw something out there for a thought.
Sure.
Then I'm going to get off and let you talk about it.
Yep.
How? What would they be doing if the North would have lost the war and the South would have won? What do you think about that one?
Do you think we would still have slavery? I guess that's all he wanted to say. I never have actually thought about that when South had won the Civil War. I don't know. We had changing views on slavery in this country. There were changing views on slavery all over the world. You understand that. It wasn't just in the United States. Other countries had slaves. there were slaves back in biblical times. I don't know, if you read the scriptures, it's all over the place. Yeah. But specifically for our country, George Washington had slaves on his huge estate, his plantation at Mount Vernon. Still there, by the way. I visited many, many years ago on the banks of the Potomac. George Washington had slaves. Thomas Jefferson, who wrote the Declaration of Independence. All men are created equal. Thomas Jefferson had slaves. Thomas Jefferson had an African-American mistress. Well, I don't know whether that's technically the correct term. His wife may have died by that point. His wife died very early. I don't know the exact timeline. Thomas Jefferson, in the original United States Constitution, African-Americans, people of color, black people, didn't count as whole human beings. They were officially listed as a fraction. They were to be, in the census, they were to be counted as three-fifths of a person in the Constitution. Now, that was changed later, of course. One of the amendments to the Constitution, but that just shows you the changing attitude toward slavery. It was a slow process in some parts of the country. It was a slow process in some parts of the world. But we had changing attitudes. We finally realized that a fellow human being should not be a slave, right? We have changing attitudes about other things, too. For example, today, do you think anyone would seriously argue that women should not be allowed to vote in the United States of America? Do you think anyone would seriously argue that point? I don't think so. If you took a soapbox out on the street corner and started proclaiming that women should not be allowed to vote, people would think you were nuts. And they'd think you slipped off your rocker, right? Well, guess what? Women weren't allowed to vote in the United States of America until 1920. Declaration of Independence, 1776. All men are created equal. I guess they really meant men in its literal sense back in those days. And then we had the Constitution, which took several years to write in the 1780s. Constitution went into effect. Bill of Rights, first 10 amendments. And on we went. Thomas Jefferson, Andrew Jackson, yada, 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 Abraham Lincoln. Still, women could not vote. And on we went. Teddy Roosevelt, right? Woodrow Wilson. Women still couldn't vote until 1920. Now, to suggest that today, you know, people would think you were, they'd think you were an idiot to begin with. Obviously, they'd think you were wrong. So our attitudes change. That's my point. On major things like this, you know, are black people fully human? Well, of course. Well, we didn't think so when we wrote the Constitution of the United States. Are women fully equal? No, we didn't think so until 1920 here in the United States. And, you know, we consider ourselves the leader of freedom in the world, right? The beacon of liberty. 283-2525, our number, 283-2525. Let's get back to the people here today. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave. Great show. Great conversation. And I'd like to, if you don't want to answer that gentleman that just called about if the South would have won, excuse me, the South would have lost eventually. Good always triumphs over evil, and the slavery would have been, you know, ended at one time. And that's why we have to have hope for the future. And that's easy for us to say, but it's hard to always put into action.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the answer. But on top of that, I want to say, and I know you're not allowed to say if you have satellite radio or not, but the Beatles channel is the greatest invention since your station. Can I say that on the air?
Yes, you can say that. That's okay.
So that's great. I mean, I don't know if you have satellite radio or not, but I just love that Beatles channel. And I know you're a Beatles fan. So,
I am a Beatles fan. And, you know, obviously, you're to a certain degree, you're a prisoner of your times, you know. But
yes.
I can honestly, as objectively as I can possibly be, I can't imagine that there's ever going to be a musical group that has had more influence than the Beatles. I mean, I can't fathom that that there would be. It's unimaginable. And all in a span of 10 years, for goodness sakes. They were only together for 10 years.
Yeah. And then, you know, there were such artists. And you know, it had to end at one point. I mean, the Rolling Stones stayed together, but they didn't impact people like the Beatles did.
Oh, absolutely. No question about it. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I through this channel and through the things on that show, and I love your channel, and I listen to you guys every morning, but I have gained more appreciation for John Lennon than I did before this station was opened. And I didn't know how much Eric Clapton played on their album before. He played on quite a number of their songs.
A little backup guitar there from Eric Clapton.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Billy Preston played on the piano for him, and he's also played with the Rolling Stones. I think he's the only one that ever did both, I think.
It is, it's an interesting conundrum. Obviously incredibly talented guys, but, you know, in their personal lives, they weren't exactly role models. And I'm not saying that everybody has to be. Well, let's face it, everybody isn't,
right.
That's for sure. And when right. you are that young and make that much money, I liken it to young professional football players today.
Yeah.
Who do absolutely stupid things. You know, whether it's Le'Veon Bell or Martavis Bryant or whatever, Ben Roethlisberger, for that matter, for the Steelers. Young, stupid kids who become multimillionaires and they do stupid things. And the Beatles did that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, but, there's no doubt about it.
And that, that doesn't take away from their music, though. Especially Lennon and McCartney. I mean, no question that they were the two most talented songwriters.
Right.
You know, in terms of musicianship, you could argue whatever. And George Harrison wrote a bunch of tunes. Ringo Starr wrote a couple. But McCartney and Lennon, I mean, it was like, it's almost like an automated teller machine. They just kept spitting them out, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
It's incredible. I have Beatles albums that I have worn out. And believe me, to wear out a CD, you really have to play it a lot.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I couldn't argue with you for a moment. I couldn't argue with you.
Yeah. And my daughter, she's in her 20s, early 20s, and she's a big Beatles fan, too, and like you said, I wore out albums playing them for her. But, you know, they were clean, fun music, and they're great. They were great.
Have you ever seen any of the Beatles tribute bands?
Just one.
I can't think of the name of the one that they've been at Butler County Community College twice over the past or 7 years, and it's not Beatlemania. It's another name, and I can't think of what it is off the top of my head. I saw them both times they were there, and I was just blown away. Blown away. I will get the name of them for you because, of course, it's, you know, the music sounds terrific. It sounds just like the Beatles. They have one costume change. The first act, they're the Beatles of the early 1960s with the, you know, the mop heads and the Nehru jackets and the thin ties and the whole schmear. And then in the second act, they're in Sergeant Pepper costumes. The silk jackets and the goofy hats and everything else. And even The guy that plays Paul McCartney, he looks like McCartney, he sounds like McCartney, and he plays guitar left-handed. Can you believe that?
Kidding.
Yes, absolutely.
How about that?
I'll get the name of them because I want to see them again, too, sometime.
Great.
They're fabulous. I'll get that name, and I'll see if I can come up with it next week. Hey,
all right, great.
Got a scoot, my friend.
Great show. Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you or listen to you on Monday.
Thanks, my friend.
Thanks.
283-2525 is our number, 283-2525. We were talking earlier in the week about Presley, Elvis Presley. And, depending on when you came of age, you might argue that he was the best. But Presley didn't write a lot of his own stuff, you know. The Beatles, almost all the stuff they did, they wrote. And sometimes they wrote it at the drop of a hat. Incredible. By the way, I saw one of on Turner Classic Movies. When was the anniversary of Elvis? It was 2 days ago, right? It was Wednesday. 40th anniversary of his death. They showed Elvis movies all day long on TCM, Turner Classic Movies. I'm not a fan of Elvis's movies. In fact, I think most of them are ridiculously bad. They are ridiculously bad. It's not just my opinion. But I saw about the last 20 minutes of Jailhouse Rock. And there are many people who say that that was the best. It was very early, Elvis movie. It was black and white, as a matter of fact. So that tells you how early it was. But of any that I've ever seen, that's probably the best. And you wouldn't guess it from the title. Jailhouse Rock, and certainly not from the song. And, of course, all of the Elvis movies were simply vehicles for him to get on stage and sing. You know, every movie, he sings about 10 songs. Many of the movie titles are song titles. Jailhouse Rock is a perfect example. But no denying the guy's talent. And it's 40 years since his passing, and people are still playing his music and loving his music. And still talking about him. So that says something. Gosh, we're almost out of time here. I wanted to, we talk about what we talk about. You know, when we say open talk, we go where the people want to go. I'm wondering if anybody got to the Pittsburgh-Butler Regional Airport to see the World War II planes that were here for the past 3 days. They had P-51 fighter. I think there were a couple of fighters and at least one bomber. And they've been here before. This is not the first time. But it's pretty amazing to see these planes up close and personal. And hats off to the groups that raise the money to refurbish these planes and keep them flight-worthy. These planes are 70, 80 years old. And you think of how many times they've gone up and gone down, which is a stress on a plane, particularly a huge four-engine bomber. And every time they take off and land, there's a lot of metal stress, metal fatigue. And these things are still going strong. It's amazing. It really is. So they were scheduled to leave at noon today, so I imagine they're gone, unless there were some weather problems. But I'm sure they'll be back sometime if you didn't get there this time around. I'm sure they will be. 283-2525 is the number, 283-2525, open talk. We are going to talk a little bit more about the eclipse coming up here in a few minutes. We're scheduled to have a conversation with David Barron. We don't have very long with him, unfortunately. He's a busy guy these days because he is an acclaimed science writer, and there are a lot of people that want to talk to him about the eclipse coming up on Monday. Are you planning to watch? I'm not, to be honest with you. I'll watch it on TV. I'll watch the video on the news that night. Or it'll be online all over the place. I'm just not too keen with all of the warnings you get about looking at the sun. I mean, right? I've had glasses. I've had corrective lenses for a long, long time. I don't need to do any more damage to see something so fleeting whenever I can safely watch it on TV. Okay, I know that it's happening up there. That's fine, I believe you. But I, I, I know you get these glasses. Somebody here at the radio station had a pair the other day. That's the first time I've actually held them in my hand and tried them on. Now, these were good ones. These were not the fake eclipse glasses. They were good ones. And you couldn't see a thing out of them indoors. Absolutely. It was like putting a blindfold on. So I took them. I tried them on. It was yesterday morning, I think. It was anyway, it was a bright, sunny morning. And I went to the window because I thought, well, I'll look out at the bright blue sky. Still couldn't see anything. It was absolutely dark. So these things, I mean, the good ones, the really powerful eclipse glasses, they are very strong, and they're the only way you should even think about looking at this thing on Monday. Let's take another call. We have a few minutes. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn. You're on the air.
Hi, Dave. I have kind of a dumb question.
There are no dumb. There are no dumb questions on this program.
Okay, this is about the eclipse.
Yes.
Well, what's going on? Can I go about my life? Like, if I have a doctor's appointment, can I go ahead and drive to the doctor's office?
Absolutely. Absolutely. All you have to do is not... It would be just like any ordinary bright, sunny day. You don't look at the sun, you know, that's all. Have you... You drive yourself, right?
Right.
So, you know, especially in the winter time when you have the very low sun angle, have you ever come around a bend or come up to an intersection and turn to look the other direction, and you, all of a sudden you're staring right into the sun? You know how painful that is?
Yeah.
And you quickly turn away, or you pull down your visor, you know, in the car, and you don't look at it. It's the same thing. You know, you'll be able to go about your business. Just don't look at the sun.
Okay. My husband said I was dumb to call, but I thought...
No, it's not a dumb question at all. And by the way, and I'm going to talk with our guest coming up here in a few minutes, we're not going to have the total eclipse here in western Pennsylvania. We'll have a fairly decent partial eclipse, but it's not going to get totally dark here. So,
okay, but this is going to last several hours, right?
Well, and that's a little... I'm a little bit confused on that because I've seen some stories that say, well, you know, you're only going to have total eclipse for like 2 minutes. But I've seen other stories that say, well, it's going to be 2 or 2.5 hours. I'll have to talk to... Dave Barron about that. Maybe he can set us straight when we chat with him in a couple of minutes here.
Okay, I'll be sure to listen. Thank you very much.
Sure, and don't worry about going to the doctors. You'll be fine.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Just don't look at the sun, that's all. We don't look at it ordinarily because it's too painful. You know, that's what happens when you go around a bend. Or I notice that especially in the wintertime when the sun is very low in the sky and you can get extremely dangerous if you're driving in the late afternoon or early morning. You got that low sun, and you just, I mean, it's just blinding. But it's so blinding and it's painful, and so you don't look. You know, your tendency is to instantly look away. Well, during the eclipse, a portion of the sun will be obscured. It'll be eclipsed by the moon. The moon is going to pass between the earth and the sun. And the moon will slowly eat away, if you can picture that analogy, it'll slowly eat away at the disk of the sun until, and I think in our area it's going to cover like 75% of the sun or something like that. But you see, it won't be as bright because it'll be partially obscured. It'll be partially eclipsed. So, you know, you might say, oh, well, I can look at it and my eyes don't hurt like they would ordinarily if you glanced into the sun inadvertently. But that's the danger, because it doesn't look like it's so bad, and you keep looking at it and you damage your eyes. And it can be permanent damage. We're not talking about, I don't know, are there still, there's still not flash bulbs for cameras, are there? You remember those, Pat Parker, when you were a kid? You get in a family photograph and the flash bulb goes off, and what would happen? Yeah. And you'd see a dot for a couple of minutes, right? Remember that? You know? You'd see this dot in front of your eyes for a couple of minutes, and it would go away. Yeah. With an eclipse damage, it doesn't go away. So don't do it unless you have the approved eclipse glasses. And there have been reports of fake ones, you know, knockoffs. Hey, this is America. You know, what can you expect? Somebody's going to make the cheapo knockoffs that don't really protect you. Sunglasses don't work. even if you have very dark sunglasses, doesn't do it. They will not protect you. These eclipse glasses, as I said, the first time I ever actually had a pair on, as Linda Weber had a pair here at the work yesterday, and I tried them on, and it's like putting a black cloth around your head. You can't see a thing. So anyway, be careful with that. Be very careful. Sure is a lot of talk about it, though, isn't there? Huh? It's all over the place, all over the news. And can you imagine what it's going to be on Monday? Here in our time zone, it's going to be an early afternoon thing on Monday when the eclipse takes place, early afternoon. So, and, of course, if it's a cloudy or rainy day, all bets are off until next time. One final call here today, and then we're going to be hooking up with our guest. Caller, this is Dave. You've got the last word. Go right ahead.
Well, thanks a lot, Dave.
Sure.
Nothing about the eclipse.
It's okay.
Hey, look, I just seen today in the Butler Eagle, the most wanted. They come out with a pamphlet in there and shows pictures of all the wanted in Butler County,
mm-hmm.
which I think is interesting.
I think
they should show it more often.
Sheriff Mike Sloop does that, I think, right? Yeah.
Yes. And I seen where that young man they found in Clinton Township, I think it was Clinton Township outside of Saxonburg, is in there on page 9, is Corey Klingenfelder, you know, was wanted, which I was surprised, for access devices. So it's just, I see so many. It was just, you know, I like to look at it because it kind of gives you an idea if you see somebody,
mm-hmm.
you know, to kind of help the law enforcement, which I think probably should be in there more often myself, you know.
I think some of those, you know, some of them are obviously more serious crimes, but I think some of them are people that, you know, skipped bail and, you know, stuff like that, haven't paid fines or something.
Well,
like that.
I just think that anybody that, you know, steals or skips bail or anything else should be known to the public. So if you see them or if they've done more than skip bail, then you know that you could call.
I wouldn't argue with you. Absolutely not. I think
out the name. I really am a firm believer in turning people in if you know they've broken the law.
I think
you're
100% correct. Yeah.
So, that's all I wanted to say, Dave.
Sure.
Just a little comment.
Thanks, my friend. Good to talk with you.
Thanks, Dave.
One of our sponsors on the program today is Gone Postal Butler. Gone Postal Butler. It's your friendly neighborhood shipping center here in our area. They're just off Newcastle Road in the Shockey Mini Storage. It's right behind King's and Villa Grande. You know the two restaurants there? They're back-to-back right behind there. So what do they do at Gone Postal Butler? They package your items for shipping. They're your friendly neighborhood shipping center. And that could be a real boon, you know. It's a bag to do that. You got to hunt for the wrapping paper, the appropriate tape, you know, the special tape, the mailing labels, and sometimes you don't have all that stuff, and yada, yada. Why not let Gone Postal Butler do it for you? And by the way, they'll ship it any way you want. FedEx, UPS, U.S. Postal Service. They package your items for shipping. They also offer copying services, scanning, faxing, mailbox rentals, custom boxes, greeting cards, lottery tickets. They even have an official notary. Gone Postal Butler. Call them to get more information on their services, 724-841-0044. Your neighborhood-friendly shipping center, Gone Postal Butler, 140 Shockey Lane, right behind King's and Villa Grande, just off Newcastle Road.
Whether you're a competitive athlete or a weekend warrior, any injury that keeps you on the sidelines is not one worth having. The sports medicine specialist at Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers will help you get back into action so you can keep up your lifestyle. Our experts understand that the same treatments for competitive athletes can be used for those who just want to be able to stay active. They accept major insurance plans, including both Highmark and UPMC. Learn more about how you can get back on the field by visiting TriRiversMSK.com.
Listener's going to talk a little bit more about the eclipse. I don't recall any eclipse ever getting the buzz that this one is. It's the total eclipse of the sun that's coming up this Monday. And we have a great individual to talk with about it. His name is David Barron. He is, first of all, he's a great fan of watching eclipses. He's traveled all over the world to see them. He is also an acclaimed science writer. David Barron, nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Thank you, Dave. My pleasure.
You have also written a book called American Eclipse, A Nation's Epic Race to Catch the Shadow of the Moon and Win the Glory of the World. your book is about an eclipse that occurred, what, 140, 150 years ago, something like that.
In 1878, and you said you don't remember an eclipse that had got so much attention. Well, I tell you, I assume you were not around in 1878.
No, I wasn't.
Neither was I. But that eclipse, it would tell you, in 1878, that total eclipse got the same kind of excitement among the public that we're seeing today.
Wow.
I mean, it was all over the newspapers. There were eclipse tourists. So I should say the total eclipse in 1878 traveled down the American frontier, Montana to Texas, and so people traveled out to Colorado and Wyoming to see it. The hotels were overflowing in Denver, and dozens of the era's top scientists, including from the Pittsburgh area, from Allegheny, Pennsylvania, one of those scientists headed out to Colorado to study the eclipse.
Wow. So it's just like this time around. People are booking hotel rooms across the path of totality, which I understand this particular year runs from Oregon, kind of diagonally across the entire United States down into the Carolinas. Is that right?
That's correct. So all of North America on Monday will see at least a partial solar eclipse. But to see the total eclipse, you have to be in that 70-mile-wide band from Oregon to South Carolina. And so where you are, it'll be about an 80% partial eclipse. That's really interesting, and anyone who is home on that day should enjoy it, make sure to watch it safely. But it is a fundamentally different and, frankly, a lot more exciting experience if you can get yourself into the path of the total eclipse.
Now, just to go over a couple of facts, if you are in that path of the total eclipse, does it actually get dark?
Yes. I mean, it doesn't get dark like midnight, but mm-hmm. It gets dark like twilight, sort of like maybe a half hour after the sun goes down. And it happens so rapidly because, as you guys will see, those who are home on Monday, even an 80% partial eclipse, you barely notice any difference in the amount of sunlight. It'll still seem like a sunny day, although be sure to look under trees at around 2:30 in the afternoon because the shadows under trees, you'll see little crescents all over the ground because the spaces between the leaves act as pinhole projectors and will project onto the ground an image of the crescent sun. That's really interesting, but it's not going to go dark. Even a 90% partial eclipse, it will not go dark. Even a 95% partial eclipse, it won't. But as soon as it's 100%, you get plunged into twilight, and it's very disorienting.
Wow.
And it is only during a total eclipse that you actually can look safely at the sun with the naked eye. So you will not at all be able to do that in Pennsylvania on Monday. Only if you're in the path during that 2.5 minutes, you actually can take off the eclipse glasses during the total eclipse and look with the naked eye.
So the totality, no matter where you are, somewhere from Oregon to South Carolina, it's only going to last for 2 minutes?
The maximum is 2 minutes 41 seconds,
wow.
And that will be in southern Illinois and western Kentucky. So now the partial eclipse will last a few hours. So the moon very slowly will eat away at the sun until it covers it entirely, and the time it covers it entirely is only a couple of minutes. But the eclipse overall will last a few hours.
Okay, that explains something that had confused me, because I've seen reports about here in our area, western Pennsylvania, that, you know, I've seen the two-minute report, and I saw it up to a couple of hours, so I was very unsure on that. Does this move across the United States kind of like a shadow creeping across the country, or does it occur at the same time in Oregon as it does in Tennessee and in Carolina?
No, the shadow is literally moving across the country, and the astronauts on the space station will be looking down and watching it. If you see it from space, it will look like a circle or an oval, the shadow of the moon, cast onto the ground, and it will literally, this dark circle will come ashore in Oregon and will be racing kind of east-southeast at about 1,500 to 2,000 miles an hour.
That is fascinating.
It'll take about an hour and a half to make the transit across the United States.
I'll be anxious to see the video from the space station. I'm sure they'll be showing that at some point later. Listen, I have to ask you about these astronomers, because you cover this in your book, American Eclipse, A Nation's Epic Race to Catch the Shadow of the Moon and Win the Glory of the World. By the way, that's available, I presume, everywhere we can buy books these days, David?
Yeah, bookstores, Amazon, Costco has it as well.
Mm-hmm. So one of the famous scientists back in 1878 who was interested in studying this eclipse was Thomas Edison, who was actually early in his career, right?
Yeah, it's a fascinating episode in Edison's life. He was just 31 years old in 1878, and he had just become a global celebrity because of his recent invention of the phonograph.
Mm-hmm.
And that summer, he decided to head to Wyoming, to the Wild West, to study this total solar eclipse, along with dozens of other scientists. And he came up with a device that, of course, no one's ever heard of today. It's called the tazimeter, which he invented to see if the solar corona, this aura that you see around the sun during a total eclipse, to see if it gave off heat as well as light. It was a really sensitive heat detector. And it was an important episode in Edison's life. He was trying to show that he wasn't just an inventor, but that he was a scientist as well.
Hmm.
And as soon as he returned to New Jersey from his eclipse expedition, the very next day, he started work on a new project, and that was the light bulb.
Huh.
And there are some interesting ways in which his eclipse expedition helped him with the light bulb when he got back. But I should just briefly say, I mentioned before, one of the prominent scientists I write about in my book is from Western Pennsylvania. His name was Samuel Pierpont Langley. He was the head of the Allegheny Observatory, just outside Pittsburgh. Allegheny at the time was separate from Pittsburgh. He, for the eclipse of 1878, climbed up to the top of Pikes Peak in Colorado, 14,000 feet up. He was up there with his telescopes to observe the eclipse, and he and the folks he was with had to battle snowstorms in July and terrible altitude sickness, but they had just a spectacular view of the total eclipse from the top of the mountain.
Wow. There's a high school named after him, by the way, in Pittsburgh still today.
Well, I'll be. Well, he went on to become a secretary of the Smithsonian Institution. He was a very prominent scientist.
There's another person that I wanted to ask you about, and we still have time to do that, because I'd never heard of her before. I saw your book, astronomer Maria Mitchell. She had to be one of the few female astronomers back in those days, 1878, right?
That's right. So she taught at Vassar College, which at the time was a new all-women's college in Poughkeepsie, and she was by far the most prominent female scientist in America. And she was not just a scientist, she was an adamant advocate for women's rights and for opening the doors of science to women at a time when there were very few female scientists. So in 1878, when all of these men were assembling eclipse expeditions out to Colorado and Wyoming and Texas, and they were receiving government grants to do that, she was excluded. But she ended up putting together her own private eclipse expedition, an all-female expedition, in 1878 to Denver to show the American public that women could be scientists, that women were just as capable and just as able to, you know, to pull this off as their male counterparts. So I just love her story. There are many, many ways in which the eclipse of 1878 was this inspiring moment for America and helped to push the United States to become the superpower in science that we would be in the 20th century. And I'm hoping that the eclipse on Monday similarly provide sort of a moment of excitement for our country to remind us about not only the importance of science, but just the sheer wonder and excitement about studying the natural world.
Mm. Good for Maria Mitchell, by the way. I mean, she should be as famous as like Marie Curie and some of the other women pioneer scientists, yeah.
Oh, I agree. And in fact, back in the early 20th century, she was very well known, but she has become sort of forgotten. And I'm hoping that my book, American Eclipse, will help kind of restore her to a place of fame. And that she can be an inspiration today.
When will this happen again? Do you know, David?
I do indeed, and it's good news for you, because the next total eclipse to cross the United States will be in 2024, only 7 years away. The date is April 8th, and the path of totality will come right near you.
Yeah.
It will go from Texas to Maine, and it will cross Ohio. And so Western Pennsylvania, I know where you are, will not quite be in the path of totality, but you will not have to go very far. So April 8th, 2024, again, it's a Monday, So I would say put it on your calendar, ask for the time off now, because you're going to want to go to Ohio and into the path of the total eclipse.
And buy your eclipse glasses early next time.
Exactly, right.
David Barron, our guest, an acclaimed science writer and author of American Eclipse, A Nation's Epic Race to Catch the Shadow of the Moon and Win the Glory of the World. Thanks, David. Nice to talk with you today. Thanks much.
Very good. Nice to talk to you, Dave.
Sure, sure. So long now.
All right, bye-bye.
All righty. We'll find out on Monday, huh? Well, will we see it? And if we see it, will it be that spectacular? I think David Barron kind of lowered our expectations. It's not going to be that spectacular here in our immediate area, at least. I mean, it could be something to see, but it's not going to blow your socks off, apparently. Well, we'll see. I hope it's not a bust. Like, I remember the first couple of years ago, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, was the first time I had ever heard the term supermoon. Remember that? Yeah, it was a full moon, and the moon was going to be closest to the Earth, yada, yada, yada. So we had a clear night that night. I went out. The whole neighborhood was out looking at this thing. We're all standing there. After about 10 minutes, somebody said, well, it doesn't look that much different to me than a regular full moon. And we all agreed, and we all went back inside. Kind of a bust. The real bust was the comet Kohoutek. You have to be of a certain age to remember that one. Pat, you're not old enough. Yeah, that was the big hullabaloo about that coming around. And I don't know. It either never showed, or it blew up before it got here, or that whatever. I don't remember the details. We'll see what happens on Monday. More to come on It's Your Turn. We're going to be talking about managing chronic pain coming up on the next segment of the program. Our guest will be Tracy Stein. And by the way, thanks for Dave Barron. Interesting. I love it when you're talking to a science guy who can make things understandable to the layperson. You know, doesn't talk in flowery language way over my head. One of our sponsors on It's Your Turn, DBS Telecommunications, a telephone equipment dealer and a data network installer serving our area, Butler area, Pittsburgh area, too. DBS Telecommunications sells, installs, and repairs telephones for your office. They primarily install commercial telephone and voicemail systems. They've been around. DBS has been serving the Butler area for more than 30 years, 32 years to be exact. We know all about it because we have utilized their services here at the Butler Radio Network for years and years, many years. We still do. They specialize in phone systems, custom-designed networks, including fiber optics, high-quality hybrid digital telephone systems with 5-year warranties. They specialize in high-definition surveillance camera systems, very important these days. Who wants to be without that? Also, multi-door entry access systems, overhead commercial paging, too. And they also provide cabling for voice, data, and cable television wiring in both industrial and commercial applications. Good stuff. Call them. See if they can help you. Phone number is 724-285-9088. 285-9088. DBS Telecommunications. They're also on the web at dbs-tel.com. For so many of us, a loving pet is, well, it's a member of the family, isn't it? If you're looking for a veterinarian you can trust when it comes time for a checkup or treatment for a pet that's ill, consider Suburban Animal Clinic and Dr. Dennis Damon, Route 8 South of Butler, 4 miles south of Butler, right at the intersection of Route 8 South and Thorncrest Drive. Dr. Damon treats small animals, dogs, cats, all small animals, and exotic pets, too. If you have a question about illness, symptoms, shots, a checkup, if you need to talk to someone about concerns with an aging pet or a pet near the end of life, you can trust Dr. Dennis Damon. He loves animals. He's a pet owner himself. Dr. Dennis Damon, veterinarian at Suburban Animal Clinic. Hours by appointment only, Monday through Saturday. Credit cards are accepted, and he makes house calls, too. Dr. Dennis Damon, Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, 4 miles south of Butler at the intersection of Route 8 and Thorncrest Drive. Phone 287-5289. Going to be talking about chronic pain, listeners, on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest is Tracy Stein, author of The Everything Guide to Integrative Pain Management. Tracy Stein, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Likewise. So great to be here.
Are there a lot of Americans who suffer from chronic pain in one way or another?
It's actually more than most people can even imagine. So about 100 million Americans have some sort of chronic pain condition, which is actually a third of the population of the United States. And 1.5 billion people worldwide have chronic pain. So the numbers are huge.
Can you define that term for us before we go any further? What do people in the medical profession mean by chronic pain?
Sure. So chronic pain is pain that has continued long after it's had a purpose. So something like acute pain, say you stub your toe or you get a cut, it's expected that it will heal, and once the healing is done, the pain is gone. By the time you hit about 3 months, or by some definition 6 months, the pain clearly no longer has a purpose and becomes much more difficult to treat, and we call it chronic pain at that point.
A little bit about our guest, listeners. Dr. Tracy Stein, Ph.D., MPH, has 2 decades of experience in health and wellness. Dr. Stein is a licensed clinical psychologist. She writes occasionally for psychologytoday.com. She is also the former director of integrative medicine in the Department of Surgery at Columbia University Medical Center. Dr. Stein, you recommend using both conventional and alternative therapies for managing pain. Is this something new in the way of treatment? Doesn't seem to be what we've heard about for many years.
Right. So there's really a growing movement toward integrating conventional treatments, so drugs, devices, and surgeries, which are the things most people will hear about from their doctors, and other complementary therapies. Sometimes we call them alternative, but when they're used with conventional therapies, we call them complementary. This has been, in many ways, consumer-driven. Many people use complementary therapies like acupuncture or massage, or do things like yoga or meditation. But the medical community is still a little bit slow to adopt that perspective. And I think part of that is because medical professionals really these days have a great depth of expertise in their particular areas, but at some sacrifice to the breadth of knowledge. And there's also some bias against complementary therapies, especially because most providers don't really learn much, if anything, about this when they're in medical school.
Mm-hmm. I guess the practice of integrative medicine is gaining some traction in the medical world, but not so much, perhaps, among psychologists, still pretty rare, and that's your specialty. What's the deal there?
Right. So, you know, psychology traditionally as a field has looked at things as all mind or all body. There's really been this split. More and more you'll see training programs that integrate some sort of health psychology, at least a class or some curriculum. That's really the move, I think. It's really the way of the future. Because we really aren't just one, and we know now from the research that our mental states absolutely affect our bodies, and our physical health affects our emotional states.
So talk a little bit about what an integrative approach to health looks like. What would people be reading about in your book?
So an integrative approach technically means drawing from the strengths of a variety of different disciplines. So it could be conventional, it could be alternative, and the ratio might look different depending on how a person is doing and might change over time. For an example, someone with migraines might see a neurologist who would prescribe medication for migraines, but might also recommend the supplement magnesium, and magnesium has actually been shown to help with migraines. They may also see a therapist like myself who will teach them to do self-hypnosis or meditation or how to use cognitive behavioral therapy. They might have a dietitian who teaches them about healthy eating and how to avoid migraine triggers. They might have an acupuncturist or even an energy healer, or they may get support through their religious community. And so integrative really means tailoring a program to what the patient's preferences are and what they feel works for them And it's also, it should be integrated. And what I mean by that is that the best care, I think, is when providers are willing to collaborate with each other, when they're willing to pick up the phone or meet in person and talk about how to best serve the patient.
What about a doctor of chiropractic? Might that be included?
Absolutely. And it's becoming more accepted, even in the conventional medical community, to say if somebody has musculoskeletal pain, especially that hasn't responded to other types of treatment, that chiropractic or other types of spinal manipulative therapy can be helpful.
So are there professionals who can help people kind of merge all of this, or do people have to kind of experiment on their own with these different specialists?
Well, in some pain centers, academic medical centers, and you can call the one nearest you to see, do they have a pain service specifically? And if so, is it multidisciplinary? That's kind of the buzzword. And so a multidisciplinary pain service may very well have someone who does massage. It's not as common, but they may have a psychologist and other different types of medical providers. But often the patient really needs to become their own advocate. And what I mean by that is educating themselves about the various therapies that might be helpful and deciding which ones really are the ones they're most likely to try. And that can depend on their budget. That can depend on how active or passive they want to be in their treatment. So passive meaning something like somebody doing something to you. So say, again, getting chiropractic or massage, and active being something like maybe doing yoga or Tai Chi.
Is the best way to decide what works for you as simple as trying some of these different things, kind of like experimenting a little bit?
That's part of it. I would say doing some reading and talking with your doctor. Ideally, you're going to include your doctor in the discussions. You'll get better outcomes that way usually. But also, there are lots of patient advocacy organizations that people can find out about online. And they can find out about, okay, well, what complementary therapies have been researched for my condition and what seem to be helpful. The other way they can find out more about that is to go to the National Center for Complementary and Integrative Health. I have a link to that in the book. And that's part of the National Institutes of Health. And they describe and review the evidence for and against a variety of complementary therapies. So that can help people narrow it down because there's a lot to digest out there.
We're talking, listeners, to Dr. Tracy Stein and about her book, The Everything Guide to Integrative Pain Management, Conventional and Alternative Therapies for Managing Pain. When we're talking about physical pain, that's one thing, but there are also, there's going to be hundreds of thousands of people who struggle with perhaps not actual physical pain, but feelings of tremendous anxiety or depression. You know what I'm talking about, Dr. Stein. Could this be considered chronic pain too?
Well, you know, if the experiences that they're having that are bothersome, the symptoms are all confined to anxiety, depression, loneliness, but they're not reporting physical symptoms, we would probably say that it's not chronic pain, even though it's emotional pain, and they can see a mental health provider to help them with that. But we do know that anxiety, depression, loneliness, these actually increase pain severity in people with pain, and they decrease the ability to cope with it. And the problem is, the vicious cycle is that when you are in pain, you are much more likely also to become depressed and anxious. So my recommendation is that somebody dealing with chronic pain or dealing with really any emotional challenges that feel difficult to manage on their own, that they seek a qualified mental health professional. There really should be no stigma attached to that. It can be so helpful in getting somebody back on their feet again.
And also, if you're stressed out, chronic stress in particular, I mean, there is a physical reaction in the body, right? We release stress hormones. There are certain chemicals that tend to be inflammatory. These are released as well when we have chronic stress, correct?
Absolutely. And what's important to note, too, is that your body reacts both in the moment and holds on to things long term. So most people will notice that if they pay attention when they're stressed or they're anxious or they're angry, their muscles constrict, right? They get tight, and over the long term, that can cause a lot of pain. Their blood vessels actually constrict, and that's not good. And you're absolutely right. They secrete stress hormones. They're pro-inflammatory. Over time, it's just bad for overall health. And so one thing to do is remember that your mind and body are meant to help you return to a state of balance. And they really want to work with you. And if you're willing to try things like even just movement, getting out there and getting whatever exercise you can do, it doesn't have to be Olympic quality. It can be just moving and stretching your body. That will help decrease stress. It will help decrease pain. And also practicing other mind-body therapies, even like listening to guided imagery or music. Your favorite music helps decrease stress. We have data showing that that's true and can help turn down the volume on pain.
I want to talk about that in a little bit more detail and some other stuff, too. A quick break, folks. We'll pick up our conversation with Dr. Tracy Stein here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Back to school time. Yes, sir. Oh, yeah. In fact, next week, there are lots of schools in our area that open up for the new school year next week. Hey, if the kids need new sneakers, Miller's Shoes is the place to go. They have all your famous brands right there under one roof. So it's no matter what your kids like or what you like, they most likely got it. They carry Nike, New Balance, Saucony, Rockport, Keds, Skechers, Easy Spirit, Asics, Pro-Pet, and more. That just about covers it, doesn't it? Biggest selection in the area for new sneakers for school or for you. Miller Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler. About 125 years they've been around there. That's hard to believe, isn't it, when you think about that? That's tradition. 125 years. You'll find all sorts of wonderful shoes in addition to sneakers at Miller's Shoes. They've got brand names you've heard of, Hush Puppies, Trotters, Foam Treads, Easy Spirit. Oh, they're also your local headquarters for SAS Comfort Shoes and SAS Comfort Sandals. Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler. Your headquarters for a great price, that famous Miller's fit, and what a selection for back to school or for you. Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street, downtown.
I was just 49 when I started getting mail from AARP. AARP? Shoot, I was just getting started in life. Then I hit my 60s and retirement was on my mind. The big question was, did I prepare? What about healthcare? Are my finances in order? Not just for my wife and me, but for the kids and grandkids. I got the answers I needed from attorney Michael Pater, specializing in elder law, long-term care, Medicaid, and wills and estate planning, is attorney Michael Pater in the Handicap Accessible Morgan Center. Phone 287-7724. Nostalgic feelings will really be kicking in when you hear such tunes as Turn Around, Look at Me, It's a 5 o'clock World, and My Special Angel. Not from some CD, but from the Vogues themselves. Live and on stage at Tanglewood, Saturday, September 9th. Doors open at 5:30. A stuffed steak and chicken buffet dinner by Chef George at 6:30. Showtime, 7:30. Tickets are $30 per person. As always, it's BYOB. Just off Hanson Avenue in Lindora is the Tanglewood, your hometown center for entertainment. 287-0021.
Lottery numbers for today. The pick 2 is 3030. The pick 3 is 427. The pick 4, 3626. And the pick 5, 22158. Wild ball for each of those is 3. The treasure hunt is 4, 5, 10, 17, and 24. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $10,000. Estimated jackpot for the Powerball, $535 million for tomorrow.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, welcome. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR is Tracy Stein, Ph.D., MPH, the author of The Everything Guide to Integrative Pain Management. You talk about, well, among a lot of other things, obviously we're truncating in the interest of time here, but one of the things that you talk about in your book that intrigues me is hypnosis as a therapy for chronic pain. Can you expand on that a little bit for our listeners, Dr. Stein?
Sure. So there are lots of misconceptions about hypnosis right off the bat. A lot of people aren't familiar with the term, and they assume that it's mind control or something they've seen in the movies, or that it is like sleep, or that you have to be weak-minded to engage in it. And actually, none of those things is true. The person is always in control, and when you work with a therapist, it should be collaborative. All of the suggestions for healing should be discussed up front. It can just feel like light relaxation or a daydreamy state. Certainly some people go into a deeper state of relaxation, but it's one of the most natural things in the world. All of us go in and out of trance states every day, multiple times a day. If you find yourself driving a car and you notice that your mind is elsewhere for, say, 5 minutes, and then you realize, oh my goodness, how did I even keep the car on the road? That's an everyday trance state. If you're lost in thought while you're reading a book, or you go to a movie and you get so engrossed in the movie that you forget that you're sitting kind of in a fake leather seat next to total strangers, you know, pretty much looking at dots on a screen, well, that's a hypnotic trance state. We know from the research that we can help people become more receptive to suggestions, verbal suggestions for increased comfort in the body, and to change the sensation of pain so that it becomes more neutral, or that it feels kind of farther off into the distance. And there are very real effects happening in the brain when you experience hypnosis. Again, you can do with a clinician, or you can do at home via an audio program.
So you can train yourself to self-hypnotize, for lack of a better phrase?
Absolutely. So one way to do that very simply is to use your own relaxing breathing to get into a more quiet meditative state. Mindfulness meditation can help you do this as well. And even if you were to imagine the turning down a knob, turning down the volume on your pain, or if you could identify an area of your body that feels quite comfortable or even neutral, and this might be something like the lobe of your ear or the tip of your nose, and you can imagine in whatever way you imagine, whether it's visual or more sensory or more auditory, expanding those feelings of comfort to other areas of the body that might need it. But there's actually a good amount of research showing that hypnosis is a very real phenomenon and that it is effective for managing pain.
I wanted to touch on one other brief kind of corollary here, because listeners, this is something that you might not think is in a book entitled The Everything Guide to Integrative Pain Management. You actually talk about relationships in your book, and how you can help people improve their relationships by utilizing what you were just talking about a moment or so ago, trance states, because we can very easily get into a trance state in a relationship, right?
Absolutely. So what I mean by that is that, you know, we all have this kind of conditioning from very early on about who and how we are and how the world's supposed to be and how other people are. And we can wind up engaging in these, you know, the metaphor is kind of like being in a dance with somebody else. And we can tend to engage in the same dance steps over and over with people and then be disappointed at what the dance looks like. And with mental rehearsal or practicing things ahead of time in the mind before engaging in them and learning to not react as angrily or with as much stress or as impulsively, we can actually then change how we are in the moment in relationships. We can make different choices more easily, and we need to make different choices to have a different outcome. Otherwise, we just get lost in the same patterns again and again. It's kind of like being on autopilot. With regard to pain, communicating directly and effectively but not in an accusatory way, is really key to talking to family members and providers about what you need from them and how they can best help you, and also leaving space for them to say, I'm not sure I can do this, but I can do that. I'm willing to help you in this particular way. And realizing that it might take a team of people in your community or your family to help you learn and make the adjustments you need to live with pain.
There is obviously a physiology to pain. If you break your leg, obviously it's going to hurt. But you also talk in your book, Dr. Stein, about the psychology of pain and how we can train ourselves to manage that better. Can you talk about that for a moment?
Absolutely. So without going into too much detail, in the rear of the spinal cord, we have nerves that go up from the body to the brain that communicate the information that says we're in pain. And we have nerves also, neural pathways that go from the brain down to the body. And the brain is how we interpret whether we're in pain or whether we're just experiencing a more neutral touch type of sensation. And what we know from the research is that what we call top-down therapies, so hypnosis, meditation, even intense prayer, listening to music that you like, these things can actually change the signal your brain sends to the body and turn down the volume on pain and sometimes even kind of turn it off, period. And it's different from the type of relaxation we might get from watching TV or being distracted. Those things can help a little bit too, but this is actually a very real effect that tells the body if things are actually okay.
Are there gender differences when it comes to experiencing and managing pain?
There are, and we're still learning more about why that is, but we do know that women are much more likely to present to a provider complaining of chronic pain. They're also much more likely to be diagnosed with anxiety or depression, and again, these things are associated with higher pain severity. One reason might be because women tend to take on multiple roles. So they can hold down a job, but go home and still take care of their families and their homes, and they might be taking care of an elderly parent as well. And so they can feel great stress, and that stress can amplify pain. We also know that, there are obvious differences in hormonal fluctuations between women and men. The data aren't as clear about to what extent that might contribute to the experience of chronic pain. We need more information. Actually, most of the research is done on men, most of the pain research, and even when mice are used, researchers are more likely to use male mice. So there really is still a knowledge gap about why women are more likely to have pain.
There are whole chapters, listeners, in Dr. Stein's book about nutrition. Obviously, that could affect pain. Dietary supplements. Now, there's something that's a little bit controversial once in a while. Some people debate the efficacy of dietary supplements. You talk about that in your book.
Right. So, it is a very polarizing topic. There are people who are very much against or very much for. There was a study that came out a few years ago in a prominent journal finding that, talking about the number of emergency room admissions from dietary supplements, and that caused a lot of hullabaloo in the news, understandably. But the people who discussed the article, other than the actual researchers, one of the things I think they got wrong is that they didn't talk about how the percentage of people who wind up in the emergency room from supplements is only 5% of the people who wind up in the emergency room because of regular medications. And what I want people to take away from that is any substance that can potentially help you may also be able to harm you if it's taken inappropriately, if it's combined with something that can make it harmful, if it's not the right supplement for you, or if it's contaminated. So consumers can go to, again, the National Center for Complementary and Integrative Health and get more information about supplements. They can go to something called consumerlab.com, which is an independent laboratory. There's a membership fee. It's like $40 a year, but you can go on an unlimited amount of times. They actually will review specific brands of supplements and tell you what actually contains what it says it does and doesn't contain contaminants. And they'll also summarize for people the research on when a supplement might be helpful and in what dose and what the contraindications are. So that can be a good place to start, but I highly recommend people always talk to their doctors about supplements because we don't know sometimes how they will interact with other medications.
There are many other topics discussed in Dr. Stein's book, Energy Therapies, sometimes controversy there, mindfulness, spirituality, pain versus suffering. And she mentioned music therapy, but she actually has a whole chapter on the healing power of the senses.